Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of Home-Based Business 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. This is truly listener-supported radio. I want to thank everybody who took time from your busy schedule to join us this afternoon as we have a discussion around the issue of nonprofit businesses and why having a nonprofit is a plus. You know, a lot of times when people hear the word nonprofit business versus for-profit business, people think having a nonprofit business means you don't make any money. No, that's not what it's about. What it's about is that you do make money. It's just that how you direct the monies that you make in your nonprofit towards the thing that you're working on. Let me give you an example. All right. I know a lot of for-profit business owners who have social causes and social missions. Only problem is they do not have a nonprofit business structure to address their social causes and social missions. So thus, they're draining their for-profit business. Let me give you an example. Let's say you own and operate an ice cream store. Well, if you own and operate an ice cream store, your primary objective is to sell ice cream to your customers. And when you sell ice cream to your customers, money goes into your cash register to help you deal with the overhead of the business, your employees, your building, buying your ice cream, everything that you need to relate to that ice cream business. And let's say on the side, you know, because you got a heart and you see some social issue that you want to address or that you want to support from your ice cream business, stand. So you see maybe a youth group or youth program, something you want to support, and so you decide to support that via ice cream business as part of your charitable work. Great heart, great concern. Only problem is because you do not have your business structure properly, taking money away from the register. Yes, you're taking money away from the register. And what do I mean by that? Does that mean don't support the youth group? No, it does not mean that. It just means that you need to have the proper structure so that as you support the youth group, that you have a mechanism to be able to do that without depleting the resources of the ice cream store. Because the bottom line for the ice cream store is a for-profit business designed to earn a profit through the selling of ice cream. Other piece that you can add as far as helping a youth group in your community, it's great, but you need to make sure that you structure a nonprofit business entity that works on that issue so the revenue that you raise under the nonprofit business entity, that it takes care of the needs of the community interest that you want to support. Other than that, you're trying to do one budget that's not designed to accommodate the issue that you're dealing with. And I hope people are following what I'm saying here. I'm not saying that, you know, you have a business owner, you have a big heart, you're concerned about the community. It's just that doing it through your ice cream store, you're depleting the ice cream store. You're taking away from the ice cream store being all that it can be. But if you set up a nonprofit entity in collaboration with your ice cream store, now you can address those needs that you want to service in the community and through your nonprofit raise monies to be able to do that. And you can leverage the ice cream store against your nonprofit, enabling you to create additional streams of revenue that will fund the nonprofit. The ultimate and best way to do that, and I'm going to tell you, I'm going to walk you through a story, and so that you can understand where I'm coming from with this. Ultimate and best way to do that is having a for-profit business under your nonprofit umbrella. And you might say, well, Mr. Jahi, Baba Jahi, I didn't know that, you know, that you can have a for-profit entity as part of a nonprofit business. Yes, you can. It's just that in most places, this is hard. It's learned. And what I mean by learn, this is how I learned. Back in the, I believe it was the late 90s or it might have been early 2000. I had to go back and check my dates. But during that time, me and my wife, we were in a nonprofit in Baltimore. There was a horrible accident at the Inner Harbor. Now, say what? A horrible accident in the Inner Harbor? Yes, Inner Harbor, Baltimore, where a water taxi turned over, 17 people drowned. Well, what happened was because they had to pay the death claims and had to pay stuff for the families of the lost loved ones, that it was found out that the water taxi business, which was a for-profit business that brought in $6 million a year, was owned by a nonprofit. And I was like, wait a minute, how's this? And then when I found out the name of the nonprofit, which I'm not at liberty to share with these airwaves in terms of the name of that particular nonprofit due to liability and libel issues. And so but let me just make it clear, there was a nonprofit in Baltimore that owned a $6 million a year water taxi business. That means that nonprofit is $6 million a year revenue stream coming in from its for-profit business that enabled it to carry out its nonprofit mission and work, enabling them to do such things as this. And I always used to try to figure out, say, well, how do they find people with a, you know, to give them $1 million matching grant? Because those of you that might understand something about grants, well, you know, they have these grants where they have times where you can apply for a grant and you can get the money if you can find a matching grant. What they mean by matching grant is someone that can match to ask the other people to put up. Well, this particular property, because they had a $6 million a for-profit business, they could put up $1 million as a matching grant fund to apply for $1 million over here in the public sector, receive that $1 million, put $4 million as collateral as a matching grant, which enabled them to basically just have a shoe-in for getting matching. If you do not know how the system works and you do not know how people are operating, then you're lost. You're lost as to how people wheel and deal and make things happen as far as this whole arena called non-profit business, 501. And I'm specifically talking about 501c3 non-profit business. So by having a for-profit entity that brought in $6 million a year, that helped this nonprofit become financially solvent and able to do whatever it needed to do because it already knew whether it got a grant, didn't get a grant, didn't get any donations or whatever. And they had $6 million a year coming in to their for-profit entity. How many nonprofits do you know out there today that has an entity that's working for them on their behalf that can bring in type of revenue allows them to go out and do their community service work, their community, you know, working on your community mission? Most of the time, the majority of nonprofits know we're begging for money for this, that, and the other. Trying to get grant money from somebody without even adequately knowing how to apply for the grant, whether it's a matching grant or just a regular grant. But in most cases, the majority of nonprofits, you know, we are professional beggars. We do not have a business that helps us with being able to understand how to run a nonprofit and how to leverage the business of the nonprofit to raise the types of monies that enables the nonprofit to reach all of its goals, all of its dreams, because we have people with a lot of good intentions and a lot of good that they want to do in the community, just don't have the money. Don't have the money. And so the whole purpose of what we try to do here, well, not what we try, but what we help people do, it's unlimited, is show folks how to, quote, unquote, from the movie, show me the money. Well, we show you how to get the money. Not just show you the money, but how to get the money
to do the things that you want to do in terms of your nonprofit and being able to make things work for you and your behalf for the great vision that you have for the community. Okay, so I've covered a major point here, which is having a for-profit business entity as a part of your nonprofit enable you to leverage that for-profit business against the nonprofit to bring in the type of revenues that you want. Okay, I want to cover another basic point here. There are also what's called workplace giving campaigns. The biggest one being the Combined Federal Campaign, or I think referred to as CFC. Another one is the State Employees Campaign, in which allows state workers that work for state government to make payroll deduction donations directly to your nonprofit. The first one I talked about, CFC, and I'm going to go over all of these together here as I tie them up. The first one I mentioned, CFC, Combined Federal Campaign, which allows government employees to make payroll deductions directly to your nonprofit. How does that work? Well, that works like this. You have government employees in an area that is covered by the Combined Federal Campaign, and those government employees, because you apply as a nonprofit and you put in your paperwork and you get a distribution code number. We have one here for our nonprofit here in North Carolina, distribution code number. And people basically put in that code number and you can send payroll deduction donations directly to your nonprofit. What CFC does, they have what's called agency fairs. What are agency fairs? Well, like the post office in Raleigh, or where I'm at right here, Rocky Mount, the post office in Rocky Mount, allows all of those people who are listed in the Combined Federal Campaign to come out to their agency on a giving day and do a presentation to share with the government employees what are you doing locally and why you would like for them to contribute to your nonprofit. And it works out really fine. Every time we've done an agency fair, we've always got people to donate directly to our nonprofit. And we get those checks and they come in. And the beauty of it is that it's not like grant money in the sense that you receive the money, and as long as no more than 15% of what is donated to you is not used for administrative expenses, then there's no grant reconciliation form to fill out or anything like that. And so this is, again, this is free money through Combined Federal Campaign, State Employees Campaign, which is where the state employees are able to do the same thing as people able to do at the level. And then the other one is the Municipal Campaign, in which city workers can do the same thing as people do on the federal and state level. So those are three major campaigns that exist pretty much in everybody's city. You got the Combined Federal Campaign, and you got the federal government employees, that's the postal workers, the people working maybe Social Security Administration, IRS, any federal government installation in your town or in your region is available that those employees can make payroll deduction directly to your nonprofit, best to the state, to the municipal employees, all make those donations. And this is very, very important and huge to understand, because back in 1974, through a federal lawsuit, the Black United Fund, the lawsuit that eliminated United Way having a monopoly over the workplace giving campaign. Now, the sad thing is that in some places where people do not know this information, even the lawsuit was won in 1974, and here we are in 2016, is that United Way in some places still has a monopoly on workplace giving campaign programs, simply because the people do not know that they are eligible to move them out of the way and get the money directly. So you have some cities where United Way does all of the workplace campaigns, and then maybe they might give your organization a few hundred dollars, you know, token dollars, say, you know, here you go, you know, this is what we got. And in most cases, really sad, United Way uses the demographics of the community to get funding, but the funding could come directly to those organizations if they just knew how to fill out the paperwork, to fill out the application for the Combined Federal Campaign, the application for the State Employees Campaign, and the application for the Municipal Government Employees Campaign. These are free tax dollars, money that are available to every nonprofit in America. But does every nonprofit know about it? No. And so if this is something new, those of you that are listening to this show today and you've never heard of before, please make sure that you text me at 252-458-3712. I need more information about workplace giving campaigns and get your email address, and I can email you, put you on my email list, because we're getting ready to go on tour this fall, Movements Unlimited, all over the country to spread the word, the news about nonprofit fundraising and how it's important for those in our community that have social missions and social causes to be able to look at how to structure nonprofit, you know, the correct way to obtain funding for your social mission. Because we all have a lot of great social missions out there that is not properly being funded. And it's important to understand, because you got people that are funding, but in most cases you got these people that are funding who, because they're making it big time, they control what people do through the funding needs. It's just like the guy George Soros, who's part of the Open Society Institute, and he funds a lot of big programs. As a matter of fact, he funds Black Lives Matter movement. And so it's important that, yeah, we want to be able to tap in and get funds from people, but we need to know how to fund ourselves so we can have more what we call coochie chagalia, self-determination, how to be able to speak for ourselves, pray for ourselves, find ourselves, and do for ourselves without others being able to speak for, create, and define for us. So it's so important we learn how to do that. One of the other things that's important to come to that venue and understand is that usually what happens is whoever funds you usually controls what you can do and what you can't do. So that's why it's important for you to control the funding needs of your organization. And so the thing is, you know, when we talk about needs, if you're building your nonprofit, you know, you need to understand what the statement is. Who is affected by an issue or a concern that you have? What has happened? Where does the situation take place? Why is it a problem? What else can you tell us about the situation? Who else thinks it is a problem? What are the underlying causes? What are the effects of this problem? I take you to example. And my wife used to run summer camp and after school program. And, you know, to answer that first question, who was affected? It was basically children with discretionary time because their parents worked. And a lot of times we had a lot of latchkey children. And the latchkey, that means basically they had a key. They get in the house while their parents are away at work, or wherever your parents are at, and you got to hope that they don't get into any mischief. What has happened? Well, a lot of latchkey children were involved either with that idle time, drugs, sex, just negative kind of behavior things. That's what was happening. So we identified in our need statement who was affected, which was children without parental supervision, what was happening, and getting into things that are not wholesome and healthy. where does the situation take place? And we was able to identify a situation that was taking place right in our very neighborhood at their own homes, friends' home, where no adult supervision was being provided. Why is it a problem? It caused young people to get off to a negative start in life. What else can you tell us about the situation? Well, we was able to help people because of these negative problems that had an impact on the young people's participation in school, as far as test scores, things that they had to deal with, basically, because they had too much idle time and they was getting into mischief and other stuff. Who else thinks it's a problem? And, you know, we had information from other sources, one called Beyond the School Bell, because JCPenney, as a mother organization, came together to help fund the after-school program because they said that, you know, the most dangerous time for children was the time the school bell rings at the end of the day to the time that their parents get home. So, you know, there was plenty of documented data to explain about the situation and who also, you know, what the problem was. But what are the underlying causes? The underlying causes of this particular problem that we were addressing, which helped us with being able to get funding, was young people having discretionary time and no parental supervision. And what are the effects of this problem? Well, we had that in teen pregnancy, sexually transmitted diseases, drug and alcohol exposure. And we could document all of those different variables based on what the young people were going through. So we was able to provide an accurate picture of what was happening. We were able to convince reviewers it was a problem, and it also that it was an urgent problem. We were able to build a strong case. We used the most important facts and used verifiable local data and population. The target population for us was 7 to 15-year-olds who did not have perennial supervision from the time the school bell rang at 3 o'clock, like about 6 o'clock in the evening. So that was the basic time that we needed to have for the after-school program for the children coming from 3 to about 6, which means fill that gap until their parents got home. And summer camp, which was our big program, well, that's when the children had the most discretionary time because they get up in the morning, school is over, if parents go to work, they had all day if they were not on the right track to get involved in the mischief making and things that would not help. So it's very, very important to identify the need of what it is that you want to address as a nonprofit and making sure you have credible sources. Don't make claims that go beyond the data. Use hard and soft data, statistics, facts, stories, and show that people will use the program. And we was able to show that people would use our program. Matter of fact, we had got to the point that we had a waiting list because there was more people that needed the program than we could service. We were always constantly trying to improve to be able to service more participants. So I give you this as a backdrop to just, again, as you're looking at how to build a nonprofit, these are some of the things that you need to look at. You need, and when you want a billion nonprofit, you got to become incorporated in the state, get a tax ID number. You got to get a Dun's and Bradstreet number, which is sort of like a credit score number for your nonprofit. Then what you do from there, then you're positioned to get the federal paper fund and get your 501c3 status. This is something that we're able to help nonprofits with and do all the time. The main purpose of sharing this information today is that I know that someone listening out here that has a nonprofit or has a vision or an idea of something they want to do in the community and something that you might already be doing. There's some people who have worthwhile causes that they're trying to fund off of their traditional business. And what I'm saying is, your traditional business was set up to do traditional business. Don't mix apples and oranges. Here's my example of an ice cream store. Ice cream stores sell ice cream. Make a profit from your selling ice cream so you can have revenue in your store, to help expand your store, to do other things that you want to do. If you got community work you want to do, then what you want to do is you want to establish a nonprofit to do that community outreach. And when you get it to the point that you really want, then, hey, you can put the ice cream store under the nonprofit as a fundraising source for the nonprofit as opposed to the way you currently are doing it. So these are some important factors that you need to consider in developing a nonprofit. In closing notes, I just want to share with you, as I shared about the nonprofit that has a $1 million a year business, it was part of its nonprofit and enabled it to put matching grant money and other type fundings. There are business entities that exist that can allow nonprofits today to be in a position to duplicate that experience where you could raise $1 million, $2 million can be used to do that. I'm not going to go over those at this point in time because we're about to wrap up today's show. But again, if you're interested in some of those nonprofit strategies of how to raise $1 million to $2 million through having a for-profit entity as a part of your nonprofit, feel free to send me a text at 252-458-3712, and I'd be more than happy to get that information to you. And also, I will be sharing information in the next week or so of our nonprofit tour that's coming up this fall that will be coming to a city near you, where we will be teaching people the ins and outs of how to build a nonprofit the right way, the constructive way, and how to be able to raise money to fund your cause. So until then, hey, this has been Baba Jahi. I want to thank you for tuning in today. And, you know, I'm really excited. I have to give a shout-out to Mr. Fred Washington and Mr. Michael Asante, who came to Rocky Mount about a week ago to HUD Housing Urban Development. Did a great, great workshop here on nonprofit sustainability, grant writing, and funding. And I'm so glad that I attended that, and then I'm so glad that I did because Michael Asante remembered me from Baltimore when he donated to our nonprofit in Baltimore through the Combined Federal Campaign, and then also donated some physical items to our facility. So I'm just, you know, that there's some things out here that work for those of you that are looking how to do community outreach, community service, and help the community, but don't know where you're going to get the money from. There's monies that you can tap into, as I said, through the Workplace Giving Campaign. There's money that you can tap through having a for-profit entity. And then the ultimate is that you put, I call it putting icing on the cake or adding the gravy to the meat and potatoes. And that's how to properly apply for grant funding. So make sure that you get in touch with me at 252-458-3712 so that we can help you explore all of these avenues and to be able to fund your cause, live your dream, and help you do the outreach that you want to do and help those in the community. Till next time, God bless. This has been Baba Jahi.